This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Man, those two really hate each other. That feud's like Biggie Tupac level. Maybe even Morgan Freeman and Shailene Woodley level.
With Dusty Hera.
I'm not hygienic. I don't wipe properly. I lack style.
And the man who accepted impermissible teriyaki benefits as a college All-American, Cam Cleland.
Why does anybody in the world ever eat anything but breakfast food?
People are idiots, Ron.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
Hour number two, it's 7:03. Good discussion on Gruden, the old school approach to football. What is the old school approach? And there's a lot of feedback coming in.
How many old school coaches do you think are out there right now? Would you consider Tom Coughlin, not a coach, but a general manager right now with how they're running Jacksonville? Would you consider that older school thought process?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Would anybody else that you're thinking of out there that immediately you go, nah, it's kind of an old school thought, but and it's working? Bill Belichick is as old school as
Mike
it gets.
Mike Zimmer, but he, yeah, but his analytics department is pretty big. They have this thing called Kraft Analytics, and Ernie Adams.
Maybe analytics is giving me a headache listening to it, because I think it's a word, another word that we use instead of stats or information. Analytics is just another way to say information. And maybe it's the headache side.
Well, it's a different,
the trendy word to use.
It's a different, it is stats, but it is a deeper dive into them. Like, they are just picking apart more so than saying, this is when we go for it. I'm going to go for it. Rally the troops and let's go.
And I'm
go.
Also always a fan of progressing, learning, understanding, transitioning, and using as much information as you can. But as soon as football turns into somebody listening to a headset call from a guy that has a sheet in front of them, compared to, wow, sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't, based on your gut, your momentum, your players. The players make the plays. A stat does not win a football game. It never does. A player does.
And that's why I said the analytics tell you to go for it. Your gut tells you the play to run.
Yeah, that's why.
And that's that's the analytics. Doug Peterson literally has people in his headset saying, all right, our charts say go for it. And he knows that on third down, that this is a situational time where their analytics department says, all right, we're at third and three here.
Okay.
If we get to fourth down, it says go for it.
I don't disagree with that. I think that's a great gut feeling.
But no,
but if your players
gut,
suck and your analytics team
gut,
is telling you to go
for it.
That's not
a gut feeling. That is an analytics thing. And then your gut tells you to call the right play.
If your players suck and you are using analytics.
See the Browns.
Well, see a lot of teams.
Yeah.
See a lot of teams. If your gut and your analytics team is telling you to do that and you don't have any Joes out there, are analytics beneficial?
And what they're saying is,
no, you still need good players.
And analytics make good
teams. That's not
teams,
an analytic.
Make good teams great, great teams elite. That's what they're saying, is that we can make good teams great and great teams elite.
The process of combining very good players with good coaches and good analytics, that's the same as great Vince Lombardi running the toss sweep in his day. You need good coaching, good players.
And that's not,
I think
that's not
what John, look, I think that's what not, John Gruden is trying to say, is that I want to put together a great group of players and use all the information I can to make good football.
And I think if you're confusing what I'm saying as that good players don't matter, that's not what I'm trying to say at all.
I think there's a lot of analytic people out there that think that stats and data will transition to wins. That will not happen unless you have great players first. Great players first. That's the number one thing you need.
Of course.
Number one.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
No,
what they're saying is, if you have the great players, we can help you beat teams with other great players. Because there's going to be other teams with great players. Our numbers will help you win, statistically. And that's what the analytics
potentially,
part of it is.
Yeah.
We've got bigger fish to fry, though, like in the NBA, where tanking is the hot topic.
What's hot?
Smoking.
What's hot and why is it cool?
They're cool because they're hot.
Hot and cool with Dusty and Cam. Your morning dose of positivity ripped from the headlines.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
Brought to you on The Fan by Area Heating and Cooling. With more than 30 trucks in Portland and Vancouver, you won't have to wait on Area.
You're hot, then you're cold. You're yes, then you're no.
Adam Silver has sent a memo to all 30 teams in the NBA about tanking, saying over the past several seasons, discussions about so-called tanking in the NBA have occurred with some frequency, both in the public discourse and within our league. And you as governors have taken the steps to address the underlying incentive issues by adopting changes to our lottery system. But he goes on to add that we have been careful to distinguish between efforts teams make to rebuild their rosters, including thorough personnel changes over the course of several seasons, and circumstances in which players or coaches on the floor take steps to lose games. The former can be a legitimate strategy to construct a successful team. The latter, which we have not found and we hope we never do in the NBA, has no place in our game. They will punish anybody who is actively losing games to the furthest extent the NBA can.
So the first question I think of is, how are you going to prove it, Adam Silver? What are you going to do? Isn't tanking subjective?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm asking the question of those of you out there. I think it's too subjective to prove. I think that if you're going to have a bunch of players, there's not one player in the NBA that's tanking. That's a coach and a general manager saying, hey, by the way, at 6 minutes, you need to take Anthony Davis out of the game.
Yeah.
Why? We're up by 10. Make the game a little closer.
They say we are developing our younger talent.
So how are you going to prove it? What is Adam Silver going to do to enforce this rule, and how can he prove it other than people like Mark Cuban flat out saying, guys, we're going to have a dinner here at Ruth Chris, and I'm going to tell you guys how to tank.
Which happened.
Yeah. I mean, how are you going to prove it?
Yeah.
Who knows? Who can prove right now how many teams are tanking? How many teams are tanking in the NBA right now?
How many teams are just actively not trying to win games? Well, Sacramento, Memphis, Phoenix.
We know for certain.
We know Dallas. Well, no, they're saying they're developing.
That's another word.
Atlanta in Orlando. The easy one to see, too, is teams that just sell off every good asset before the season even starts. Yeah. Looking at you, Chicago. You know, and those teams you can look at and you go, yeah, they're not trying to win right now. But to say that the players on the floor and the coaches on the sidelines aren't trying to win games, I think that is short-sighted because those guys want to win games. Tanking is a GM front office thing in a fan perspective.
So we've been tanking in sports, especially in the NFL, since the history of sports, because there's always bottom feeders. Every single year. So all those teams are always tanking.
You're not attempting to do it, though. I mean, you can look at, like, Chicago. Can you say that Chicago, with the roster moves that they made this past year, were actively trying to win games when you send your best players elsewhere?
No, I don't know that. I think the words...
I think it's pretty clear to see.
Well, I think the words you use are, were you rebuilding?
Yeah.
Well, I understand what a rebuild means. It means you tear everything down, and then you bring in and try to draft and get free agents to create a new organization. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But tanking, when you tell good players to stop playing, how can you prove that?
Well, you surround them with...
No, prove it. I'm saying prove it. I know how you do it. How do you prove it?
Yeah, you prove it by Mark Cuban coming out and saying we're going to be tanking. Yeah,
well, you got to be stupid.
My question is, does it really affect the way you watch the NBA? Because these teams that are tanking, they have no shot to win a championship, so they're saying... If we can't win the championship, we might as well get a great pick. There's only a handful of teams every year that are in it, in our playoff contending type teams. And does tanking really take anything away from those teams?
Mm-hmm.
Does it take anything away from Golden State and Houston and Boston and Cleveland? Does it take anything away from Portland, who's trying to get in the playoffs and make a playoff push and get in there if these other teams are tanking?
So tanking is certainly... It's something that I despise to the core because it's giving up. It's quitting, and I can't handle quitting. I can't stand it. I hate the word I can't, so I'll use I can't and the things I don't like in the same sentence. I can't stand tanking. Those of us out there listening to the show do understand that. But I do value teams that are rebuilding because I do understand that this is an organization, and if you're overpaid, you have bad talent, you have bad seeds, your coaches are bad, you have to clean house somehow, mm-hmm. some way. I don't mind that. I do understand it. But from the player's point of view, what are these guys doing that's literally tanking? What are the players doing? Well, other than playing to their ability, which they're still top-level talent. These are NBA players. Is it just that they're not motivated? And that's not tanking. Motivation is based on I get a paycheck no matter what, and I know that we're losing. So I don't really care.
Well, you can look.
I don't really care anymore.
You can look up around your roster and you can be like, man, we're going up against Steph, Draymond, Durant, and our GM sent us to a gunfight with a water pistol.
So they're quitting. Mentally quitting.
But you know the mental side of it though, right? Where you're sitting there, you're going, we're not going to be making the playoffs this year. What do we really have to play for? And these teams that we're playing with are superior talent.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you can't beat them.
No, it doesn't. But it makes it a lot harder when mentally you're already beat before the game.
So I think the tanking side that Adam Silver would have a hard time proving, which is, I think, is what a lot of teams are doing, is the mental makeup of how you're sending a message to your team from the top and funneling it down.
No question.
It's not a memo. It's not a typed email. It's certainly not a text. And it's not a dinner with the Cubans. It's how you're sending your message mentally to your employees. Tanking happens in businesses. I don't know if it does, fine. It means you're a crappy business. There are a lot of crappy businesses in the NBA right now.
Here's
the bad part about it, which I think is a travesty, is that how many people can have such terrible, terrible businesses yet be so profitable? Because that is
true.
Think about it.
You know,
I could have a business that I could just perform like garbage,
right?
Yet my profits are worth billions.
You know what it's like?
It's so mentally confusing.
You know what it's like? It's like a corporate takeover, right? You know that if your little business is going to be bought by a big corporation, what do they want you to do? They want you to trim the fat, so then when they buy your company, all of a sudden your stock options go up. It goes through the roof because you've trimmed all the fat. You're part of a now bigger parent company. That's what the draft lottery is. Yeah. Like, you're trimming the fat right now so you can get your big corporate takeover is the draft lottery and getting a high pick.
Do you think Adam Silver sits around and goes, I need my big brands to be good? Like, do you think he sits around and goes, boy, it'd be great if the Lakers were good. Let's make sure they're good. It'd be great if the Knicks were good.
Privately?
It'd be better if Chicago was good because every big market team sucks. Those three pillars of our country, L.A., Chicago, New York, the best media markets in our country right now, their teams are awful. I mean, not just awful, they're awful.
Privately, yes, he
awful.
Does say that.
So Adam Silver sitting around going, how do I make these teams better? Portland, yeah, they're good. They're going to be good. We're not worried about Portland. We're worried about our big brands.
Yeah, and they're struggling right now. But I don't think that this is harming the NBA, the fact that you got Houston, San Francisco, Boston, and then one of North America's biggest cities, Toronto. We forget about Toronto. Toronto's massive. They're doing
okay. Because it's our top hat. It's Canada.
It's right. We forget about them.
It's Canada.
But
it's like 60% tax rate there.
Yeah, more than that.
I think it is.
It's like
that would
way
suck
more
to play there. All your money's gone.
It would. But this is a good text on the fan text line 55305. What's the difference between tanking and point shaving though? That's what's hot and cool on the fan. It's brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling. More than 30 trucks in Portland and Vancouver. You won't have to wait on your local train comfort specialist. It's hard to stop a train. This is Dusty and Cam on the Fan.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
We had a texter ask, what's the difference between point shaving and tanking? And on the surface, not much, but when you really think about it, players don't try to lose games. They don't. They do not actively say, oh, my owner wants me to lose this game and miss this shot. They don't.
Yeah, here's the thing is this texter hits the nail on the head, and that's kind of exactly how I feel, is who's embracing gambling more than any other sport?
NBA.
What happens when your teams tank and you say you're tanking?
Have you seen
how that? Does that translate to gambling?
Vegas has adjusted or starting to adjust point spreads based on teams they believe are tanking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they're saying, okay, we're doing this because of
you're
tanking.
Fixing games.
Yeah.
No wonder why Adam Silver's freaking out.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I'm trying to embrace gambling and that's going to be good for our sport. We don't tank.
Well, on the surface, there isn't much of a difference until you really think about it. Does that coach really want to lose? Does that player really want to lose?
I don't think they care, Dusty. I don't.
The players don't want to lose, though. You don't
No, of course not.
Players don't want to.
I thought you're talking about
front office.
I'm talking about people who own the organization.
No, they don't care.
No.
I have a theory. I have an idea. Remember how I fixed football the other day? I'm going to fix NBA right now. What
incentive-based contracts?
No. What if you guarantee the ninth place team in the West and the ninth place team in the East a top five pick?
Incentive based.
Yeah.
Incentives.
Well, no, so yeah, not just draft, not a contract, but
incentives.
You guarantee that the ninth place team in the East and West will get a top five pick. Mm. That race will be interesting. But then you'd have teams that are in eighth going, wait a minute, we have no chance to beat Golden State.
You just have a different sort of tanking going on.
Yeah, you would have.
You can't fall too far back. Or else
you're out. Sounds difficult.
I'm just saying.
It's intriguing.
What if you give the eighth place team then in the West?
Well, that's what the lottery's supposed to be, though.
You incentivize getting to the playoffs.
It is.
But getting your butt handed to you.
Any sort of system anywhere, people find out ways to game it and get around it.
I don't think I fixed basketball with that one.
No.
I don't think I did.
I think basketball's fine.
I almost like it better with the eighth place.
Yeah, with eighth place guaranteed to top five because it's like, hey, here's your participation trophy for the playoffs.
Right.
Like maybe
thanks
next
for coming
year,
for the first round.
Maybe with a top five pick, you can get a player that can beat this team that you got mopped with.
I'm sure there's a lot of ideas, a lot of people that are very smart in this game that are sitting at a table and they're deciding, how do we fix this? It's never been fixed. It's never going to change. No matter how many times you say it, even at the highest levels, 32 teams, 30 teams, there's only going to be about five or six can win every single year.
Or just
everybody else is battling for mediocrity.
Playing off of Dusty's idea.
Oh, here we
start
go.
With
now we're spitballing. I like
number
this.
Eight.
Think tank.
You get the one. You got the eighth in each league. You get the one and the two. Then you go to the nines with the three and the four. Then back to the sevens, and you kind of stagger it that way. So the further away you get from the eighth in either direction, the lower down the board you go.
Well, what about the teams that suck? Where do they get to pick?
They continue to suck.
Play better. It's kind of like relegation in the NBA.
No, I'm not saying be a playoff team. Just get closer to it. Be more competitive, you know? And
here comes the it's not fair chant. I understand that.
Yeah.
How many teams do you think in the history of the NBA have been great based upon tanking? It's not. There's always been a free agent that's showed up. Or Kevin Durant, really good Golden State. You're good. But the reason why you're elite, you got a free agent.
It worked okay for the Spurs a while
San Antonio
back.
Did it. To get Tim Duncan.
Cleveland
did it to get LeBron James.
One player.
Well,
how many generations?
The Spurs didn't have just one player.
They had David Robinson.
They shut David Robinson down for the year and said, yeah, he's not going to play this year. And then they got Tim Duncan. So, like,
and also
that
fired
is
the coach, and Greg Popovich made himself the coach.
Yeah, that is tanking.
Certainly, but I understand that. But
they tanked.
They didn't win until they got their free agents and they got all their players. And again, the LeBron James thing, LeBron James never won a championship at Cleveland until he left Cleveland to win free agent-wise in Miami and then come back and, oh, by the way, get a bunch of free agents to win the title. Tanking has not worked with LeBron.
Well, tanking did to get LeBron. Because look at where Cleveland was before and
after. But they didn't
get
LeBron. He left.
No, they drafted him.
I know that. But he left them because they were garbage.
They instantly became relevant. When they drafted LeBron James because they tanked that year.
And I remember when Cleveland was really good and they had good teams and they were in the late 80s and then the 90s. They just couldn't get by Jordan.
And it's worked.
Elite players is the exception that proves the rule.
They haven't won a championship yet, but tanking worked pretty well for Boston too when they sold everybody.
They fleeced the Nets.
Well, they
fleeced them.
But they got rid of everyone at the same time, and they said we're gonna take a dive here, and
Danny
it's gonna be
Ainge
a couple years.
Sold some I don't know some mama's drinking cough medicine to the Nets.
Well, but
that
they,
made them good.
On,
that wasn't tanking.
He had nudie pictures of somebody.
Yes,
they also took a dive and got bad themselves to get
the reason why. Yeah, but the overlying reason why the Celtics are good is because what they did to the Nets. That's clear.
But they also took a nosedive.
I also had hair 25 years ago, too.
They went 25-57 in 2013.
Yeah. Tanking doesn't work. Okay, the exceptions prove rules, but overall, tanking does not work. It never has, and it never will. The Lakers were really good when they got Shaq combined with Kobe. They were really good when they brought in Pau Gasol, and they got the rest. That is how you win a championship, become a dynasty. You want to have a one-off? Fine, be a one-off. But that's, again, that's not consistency that will prove the rule throughout all of NBA history.
No, free agents really help a lot. Like a lot. That'll definitely make your team
I hope Adam Silver can prove tanking. That'd be great because then the gamblers would be happy.
wouldn't they? Would you get a refund?
Have you ever got a refund from Vegas? You ever get a refund from Vegas? You know where your refund is?
No.
The kick in the pants as they take your wallet away.
Yeah, I reported that bet on black.
I reported an
attempted mugging at a hotel. And they didn't
Reno.
I didn't even get a buffet voucher. Like, they didn't even give me a free drink.
And you know they have a camera.
Yeah. And a guy tried to get me at knife point. That was Reno, though. So
Reno's an armpit.
That is true.
It's your fault for going there.
I had a great time.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I mean, outside of that,
you almost got stabbed. That's a great time. Hey, had a great time, honey. How'd you do? Well, I almost got stabbed. But other than that, it's fine.
It's okay. I mean, it wasn't all bad.
Sounds great.
I would be okay if I never went back. You know? Mm. Torino? Have you ever been?
No.
You're going to end up going there because they have baseball tournaments and softball tournaments there. You're going to be in Reno.
Nope. We passed through there once briefly. We were in there maybe 12 hours. Road trip to Disneyland. Decided to go that way. And we got there. We wound up leaving way late because my wife got food poisoning. We pulled into Reno at 3 a.m. and then left in the morning.
That's safe.
That was about all we needed.
It's a good trip there. All right. NFL Combine is underway. Some of the coaches took the podium yesterday and they are coming out with some pretty hot takes. We'll give some to you from Matt Patricia, the new head coach of the Lions, Hugh Jackson of the Browns, and Doug Peterson is going to be putting it on one player to decide his fate. Here's Rust with SportsCenter.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080 The Fan.
I didn't swear.
I swear that you did.
I did not. I did not.
I swear.
P1 Jesse, talking to you. The combine is going on and down in Indianapolis, and coaches are taking the podiums, and they're trying not to say much about free agency. A lot of coach speak going on down there. But
no collusion.
Hugh Jackson really wants a better opportunity not to screw up the number one and number four pick. He took the podium yesterday, and he's pleading. He needs help.
Sam's making the decision. We wish he would throw, like to see him throw. But at the same time, there's going to be other time to have an opportunity to watch him work out and do those things. But again, do I wish he was throwing here this weekend? Yes, I do. To watch him compete with the other guys. But at the same time, that's not going to hinder us making a decision about what kind of player he is for our football team.
Sam Darnold not throwing.
The old little bit of guilt trip. I love the coach's guilt trip at the combine. That's my favorite thing. I had no clue that was going to go on when I was 20. What was that? I think I was 22. And every single coach is, you performing here? You can do this all here. You can make sure it's really important. You need to make sure you do all this stuff here because, you know, all these guys are here to watch you. We're here to watch you. We need this kind of information. But Sam Darnold's like, nope, nope, nope. I'm the first pick overall. I don't need to. The power and the intelligence of a lot of players now that you have, but it only falls on a few guys when you're in the top 10.
Yeah, he really shouldn't throw because all he's going to do is lose money.
No, he's not losing money either way. He could throw if he wants. He could go out and throw left-handed. It's not affecting.
Well, okay, I don't want to say lose money. The only thing that people will do is nitpick him if he does throw.
Yes.
There's no benefit of him throwing. There's only a poor result, which is nitpicking.
Why is it important to throw? So you can have something to look at and everyone can scrutinize and nitpick you. Is the combine drills football?
No. No.
No, is even throwing at the combine football?
No.
What would you describe it as?
Underwear Olympics, dude.
It is.
I mean, you're throwing on air with guys that you've never thrown with before. A lot of the time, you have never thrown a ball to those guys, and timing is everything. Everything. He couldn't even throw the 15-yard out.
That's because the guy fell down.
Yeah, he's not. He didn't hit his fifth step and then hit the 15-yard out. Well, that's because he's never thrown a 15-yard out to this guy. He doesn't know how quick his drop needs to be to hit the guy on the 15-yard out. I mean, the receiver doesn't know when his head should get around, his hand should get around, but they'll nitpick these guys to no end. I do have a little bit of breaking news here of something that we talked about at the beginning of the show.
Okay.
And I want to make sure that we have we get this in the show at its proper time. Speaking of quarterbacks at the draft, or combine, excuse me, Baker Mayfield is in. His height, would you like to take? Your guess was just under 6 feet. My guess was 6 feet and 1/8 of an inch. So 6 feet, 1/8 inch.
I have a conspiracy theory on this.
What?
Right now. I think the only reason you're making this at breaking news is because you're right.
No, I would have done it either way.
No. Jeff, you're laughing with it. Because it wouldn't be breaking news unless Dusty was very close.
I'm not.
Right? Fractionally close.
I'm not right.
Hey, guys, guess what? Remember when I said this?
Do you remember what I said?
It literally just popped up.
No. Okay. I'm guessing, and I'm not looking at anything. I swear to you, my fingers not looking at anything. I'm saying 5'11" mm-hmm. and 1/8. That's my prediction.
We're both incorrect. 6 feet, 5/8 inches. And then he is, his hands are important for quarterbacks.
Are 9 1/4.
Oh, you're really close.
Am I close?
Yeah. In 9 2/8.
9 2/8.
Yeah. Which is 9 1/4.
Can we just fractional it down?
Why is that 9 1/4?
Because
nine
I was just going to say the 9 1/4. We did
because they're just measuring in eighths, and for some reason they can't figure out fractions and how to reduce them.
2/8 is
2/8 is a quarter.
1/4.
1/4.
Yeah, yes. That's 1/4. Why don't you just say that?
Can I do 15/60? Can I do that too?
Sure, let's do it.
Ooh, check out the math on Cam.
The big brain on Brad.
Look at
that.
The big brain on Brad.
Might as well.
So Darnold isn't going to throw. Baker Mayfield and his small hands will throw.
You think those are small?
No.
Those aren't small.
I don't have a frame of reference for hands.
We'll measure it up.
Okay. It's thumb tip to pinky tip, correct?
Correct.
So you just kind of space them out there and
yeah, you put you have a ruler down, and then what you do is you put your hand down.
On the ruler?
They put your hand down on the ruler, and you're not supposed to like stretch it. You're just supposed to put your hand out wide, fingers out wide, and then just go from there to there.
Okay.
My only frame of reference for hand size, I remember back when the Trailblazers were making their finals run, and in the Oregonian, they put a life-size printout of Jerome Kersey's hand, who also was famous for not being able to palm the basketball. Yeah. His hands were not that big. No. I think he had maybe a quarter inch on my hand that point. And yeah, that's my only frame of reference.
Biggest hands I've ever seen. And you need to look at these. Kawhi Leonard's hands are enormous.
Yes, they are.
Along with Chris Webber.
You know,
Chris Webber's hands are enormous. Well,
nobody beats Boban.
Yeah, he wasn't even the biggest hands on the Spurs last year because Boban.
Well, he's.
Like, there's a.
He's a missing link.
He's a freak.
He's got gigantism.
He's got Andre the Giant hands.
Yeah, he does.
He does.
But Kawhi Leonard can put his hands up and he can guard you from the middle of your chest to the top of your forehead. It just will take up the entire space.
Face guarding starts at your chest Kawhi
Leonard. Huge hands.
That's why his logo is like good a handprint.
Good or bad in football?
Big hands?
Other than quarterback. Good or bad? Because I will argue that my hand size for me was good until I dislocated and I fractured and dislocated every finger on my hand.
Well, it's okay. I don't have big hands either.
Yeah.
I don't have big hands, and I dislocated every finger on my hands too.
But the guys with the little
comes more from being a pass catcher than your hand size.
Really, all mine came from blocking.
Really,
all came from in line play, grabbing and getting a hold of guys, and then having it torqued, having hitting it because I punched a lot. You punch receivers still do a little bit of that, but most of the time. You're getting your injuries from falling, catching.
I had two from a ball.
Yeah.
Like trying to catch a ball. And then the other ones are getting caught in a face mask or get caught in a jersey and they just kind of
nobody has hands like Nicole Kidman.
Oh, she's got scary.
That was the camera angle.
The alien clap. That's not camera angle. That's just some
Hercules. Hercules.
Keep my manicure right.
okay. Let's move on. Back to the draft or combine. Matt Patricia, new coach of the Detroit Lions, is going through a new part of the combine process to him as the head man, but it is one that you believe is of utmost importance.
I always love to have the one-on-one. I always love to have that communication face-to-face. So anytime we get a chance to meet guys in person, I always feel that's best. I'm a little bit lost in translation with the rest of it.
Who is that talking? That voice.
Sounds like Bart Simpson a little bit.
It gets me every time you hear that big You see that big beard? He's a big guy.
I'm trying to. How can you do that? Can we try to replicate that?
It's like you got
it's up here.
You got to kind of dry it out a little bit. I really like coming down here. And he's a big dude.
A big boiler. And I got a big boiler, and I just like to talk about that.
Does anybody have a pencil sharpener? But the face-to-face interviews, most important part.
Yeah.
Now, how many?
15 minutes.
You went in. Okay, so 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Not with every team, though, right?
Oh, yeah, 15 minutes.
Oh, with every
team. As many
teams
as you want. They have a big air horn. It's a giant air horn.
It's like speed dating.
It is speed dating. It's exactly what it is. You know, you don't want to show anything here. You want to show your cards. But you get 15 minutes, and you walk into the rooms, and there's like, and then you have to go, and you run out, and you go to the next one. And then everybody's pulling and prodding you, and she's like, hey, come see this coach. Come see this coach. It really is. It's the biggest job interview in sports. If you're an NFL fan, if you're a young man trying to get a job, you have to be excellent at your 15-minute interviews. In fact, I practiced them for a month trying to answer the questions right. Because the things you will be asked at the Combine, in my day, not what you're asked nowadays.
What were you asked?
NSFW.
Oh.
A lot of things.
Is there one that you can share? Were you asked if your mom was a prostitute like Des Bryant
was? I was asked how many people I had relationships with.
Oh. Relationships or just relations?
Yeah, relationships, because they wanted to know if I had a lot of like sugar mamas and a lot of people on the back end and people like that you're going to be bringing with you and a lot of things like that. Do you have any kids? Then those are questions. Is that important?
You know, that was the easy question for you to answer with the how many people are coming. But tougher for Jeremy Stevens, who famously had a fight in the stands because his side piece met his main piece.
Yeah, not a good one.
Yeah.
A lot of guys have those kind of things, character issues, which would be serious HR violations. But I wonder, because you're not hired by any, are those HR violations now? Because you're really just interviewed. More would be.
Yeah, they are. They're HR violations.
But what's so. if you're not an employee? What HR?
It's still there's certain things you can't
ask. They're union violations.
Right.
And unions don't care because you're not an employee yet, so you're not making them any money.
The interview process. Okay, so you went through all 32 teams.
I didn't get to sit with all 32 teams. I went to specific teams that were really targeting me. There were some coaches I didn't go to.
Oh, so you can say no.
Yes, you can absolutely say no. Say, okay. No, I'm going to see such and such right now. You could have, like, Bobby Beathard with Detroit. He wanted to be going there. I'm like, I'm going to go see San Francisco right now.
Could you tell the difference between, like, Matt Patricia, first-year head coach? Did you go and sit down with any first-year head coaches where you were like, well, this is different? Because I think that would be a tough thing to do is lead that interview process for however many guys you're interviewing.
That's a really good question because in 98, this spring of 98, I don't remember who was a new coach at that time. That's a good question. But I think that if you're going into this and a lot of guys are going to want to go meet with the newest coaches because they feel like that they can make an immediate impression on them because they're not stuck in their ways yet. It's fresh. It's new. And so you could be like, hey, I kind of like that guy. Hmm. And how many times have all of us have been in an interview? What's the most important thing in an interview?
Punctuality.
First impression.
Yeah. Being there on time. First impression. So what was yours?
First impression of that interview. Usually you know if you like somebody and you're going to hire somebody within the first, I think the stat is the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, you have 30 seconds to woo somebody.
It is. You know who you're talking with.
Make sure your zipper's up.
Yeah. Close up shop.
Make sure your belly button ring isn't shown, Cam.
Same thing in football.
Or your tramp stamp.
It is.
Same thing.
It slipped right past you.
Are you walking
you,
into
it?
An interview
just
that way,
slipped
Jeff?
Right past you. Oops, you I dropped into something.
It? Are you as you turn and walk away, he's like, oops, I dropped this.
You know, she's a bad mother. Why don't you back that ass up?
Doug Peterson is going out thinking outside the box, and it involves a pretty key off-season target. Dustin Cam on the Fan.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
Check that out.
Okay, Cam's radical solution to fixing the NBA is actually pretty good.
Okay.
We'll have that. Nope.
Okay, I know. We'll tease it. We're teasing it. Stay with us. It's going to be good. Trust me. You're going to want to hear this.
We're going to have
it is the fix of all fixes.
Fixing NBA. I'm so happy. You and I, in this week, we've solved so many issues.
Yeah.
You know.
World peace.
And it's only Thursday. It's only Thursday. We got a lot of week ahead of us. We were talking NFL Combine, and this is kind of a different move, something Doug Peterson has talked about. But he said that he will allow Nick Foles to determine whether or not he is a Philadelphia Eagle next year. Super Bowl MVP. And at his press conference, Doug Peterson said, you know, that's something that we're going to leave it up to him. You know, if he wants to be here and he wants to be a part of our team, we'd love to have Nick Foles. But if Nick Foles doesn't want to be a backup and he wants to be a starter, then we'll see what we can do for him. That is a stark contrast to what we usually see NFL coaches say and do, especially with a guy who has a year left on his contract.
So we need to go back in history. Trent Dilfer, what did Baltimore do for Trent Dilfer after he delivered them a championship? Now hold the phone here. I'll tell you this, is that he did quarterback the team for a championship in the year 2000. And that was one of the greatest defenses ever, but he was still the starting quarterback. And who did they get after him? You know what they did with Trent Dilfer? They cut him, got rid of him, and they brought in Elvis Gerback. What happened then? Nothing. Nothing until they found another guy from Delaware.
Joe Flacco.
Yeah, Mr. Flacco. So let's go back even further. What did they do with Jeff Hostetler?
The Giants.
He lost his job, never to play again. Phil Simms took back over.
Yeah.
Never to play again. So with history does say, there's only a couple guys, and I played with one of them. Didn't win a Super Bowl, but when Kurt Warner lost his job with the team that I was on with the St. Louis Rams at the time in 2003, lost his job from a concussion in the opening game with the Giants, he was replaced by Mark Bolger. Mark took over. Kurt didn't get along. Next thing you know, bang, he goes to the Giants, but then he resurrected his career. He was a two-time MVP, but he was not going, in my kind of opinion is, Kurt, he really cemented himself a Hall of Fame because what he did with the Cardinals and getting them to the Super Bowl.
Right.
This is very difficult. When I look at Nick Foles, what is the best decision for him? And Coach Peterson is doing something that we don't see from a lot of coaches, giving him a solid.
And that is kind of the aura around the organization that you hear guys talk about, whether be it Jason Kelce or Chris Long or any of these guys that come out and they say, Doug Peterson lets us be us. He lets us be characters, and he
they have fun, Dusty.
He has a relationship with us. But no, the different part is that
you hate to have five championships and give my one championship for five championships.
Now, that was
because we have fun here.
Lane Johnson.
We have a lot. Lane Steroid Johnson.
Lane Johnson, that was said in jest.
No, like, I think he was serious.
No, he wasn't. Did you hear the interview?
Yeah, I heard the interview.
Did you?
When people say
because he was laughing because it was like
kind of laughing.
The other guy, he didn't even say instead of five.
Well, he
because
meant.
The other guy goes, yeah, instead of like five, and he goes, yeah, well, he laughed and said, yeah.
But he did say that they have fun. That's what we're talking about. Is Doug Peterson allows his guys to have fun.
It's relationships.
He's good
with the players where they say we'd do anything for him, and this is interesting because Doug Peterson, I think, is saying this now. But when it comes down to it. Yeah, if Nick Foles doesn't want to be there, then they want to trade him. They're not going to be just giving him away.
Oh, God, no.
It's going to be because they get a king's ransom for Nick Foles, and they say, good, he didn't want to be here, and we can get a buttload for him, so we're going
to
do it.
What is a buttload, Dusty, according to Urban Dictionary?
I think the actual dictionary, a buttload is like...
What would be a buttload? Because if Marcus Peters only got a second and a sixth for an all-pro cornerback... What are you getting for a Super Bowl quarterback?
I believe a buttload is slightly less than an S-ton.
Okay. that was really descriptive, and I have no idea how much that is.
A buttload is 384 gallons.
Okay.
So.
Jimmy Garoppolo went for a second-round pick. Are you getting more than a second-round pick? That's the market. The market's been set.
I think, yes, you are.
I don't think you are.
I think you're getting a second.
I don't think you're getting.
I think you can get it. You can get a team because
if Jimmy Garoppolo went for a second round pick. Nobody is given a first round pick for Nick Foles.
But here's the thing.
Nobody.
Jimmy Garoppolo came at a time in the season where teams weren't desperate.
Agree.
Nick Foles would be traded after free agency and a team's going, oh my gosh, we need a quarterback. And then that is when you can get a first round pick.
Which team was desperate? I think San Francisco was just smart. The timing was perfect.
What are you talking about? I'm talking about Nick Foles' trade. A team would be desperate.
Oh, no, no. I was mentioning Jimmy Garoppolo. You said that Jimmy Garoppolo went during a desperate time.
No, I didn't. I said they're a dead time in the market. No. Nobody's desperate there.
Jimmy Garoppolo was not getting traded to anywhere that wasn't good for him because that Bill Belichick wouldn't have done that to him.
Yeah, but what the Eagles would do is they wait for free agency to dry up, and then they trade him.
Philly might send him to Cleveland if Cleveland really wanted it.
If they give him a first-round pick, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I believe that trades set market value because nobody's going to give up a bunch. Just like last year, everyone said the Browns were going to give a first and a second for Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, that never came to fruition because it wasn't real.
Was it not real, or was it Bill Belichick didn't?
He wanted two first rounders. I think he wanted two first rounders.
Yeah. But I think desperation will tell a different story. If teams get desperate enough, yeah, you give up a first rounder.
I'll tell you this. I would offer a second-round pick for Nick Foles tomorrow.
I would too.
And I'd probably a second and a fourth.
But, yeah, but if you're Philly, you're like, we could keep him. We'd like to.
You sure could because there's no guarantee that your superstar quarterback's going to have an ACL return that will be great. Although, Brady did it, so Wentz can do it.
See? Brady did
it. No problem.
Anybody can. Okay, next hour. Cam fixes the NBA. Odell Beckham, he wants a buttload of money, which we just learned is slightly less than an S-ton, right? And 384 gallons.
Hey, what'd you learn today?
But coming up next, John Gruden goes against the grain again. And he's got some tough choices. Dustin Cam on the Fan.